Big show for you here today. Joel Smith joins me to look at 1080p's that we are raising an eyebrow at right now. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's bad. Maybe we have a strong take. Maybe we don't. But Joel and I are going to look in 10 players that we are, like I said, taking a look at those ADPs and we aren't quite sure at. We talk Kyler Murray. We talk Quinshon Judkins. We talk Amarian Hampton, Trey McBride. Big names all the way across the draft board. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that, it has been a minute since we've seen our guy Joel Smith, but here he is to talk a little ball. Joel, what's going on, man?
Hey, I'm excited for today. It's going to be fun. It has been a minute, but I'm excited to talk some football.
No doubt. And we are getting really into the meat of the offseason here. And with that, it also means we're getting into kind of the main portion of fantasy draft season prep, Joel. Like, this is when we got to really start thinking about, okay, we know what these teams are going to be. We know what the depth charts are going to look like for the most part. You know, there's going to be some new players added along the way here or there. But for the most part, again, we can start our kind of fantasy projections. We can start seeing where guys are going to slot into different ADPs and where they're going to go in these redraft leagues and best ball and everything like that. And that is essentially what we're going to be doing here today. We are going to look at 10 ADPs that we are interested in. You know, the concept of the show, it's ADPs we have a problem with and all that, you know. I don't know if that's really what we're going to do. Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and say, like, are we going to point out this is good or bad? Maybe, right? We did that in the pre-show process. But for me, Joel, the ones that I brought to the table and you brought five, I brought five. It was more like, I think this is interesting and I'm not quite sure how I feel about it. Maybe you have more stronger feelings than I do. To me, I'm still kind of trying to, you know, sort this whole thing out.
I think I have a couple of each, a couple that I do feel sadly strong about. Just the new consensus ADP kind of has just dropped the past week or so after the draft. But then again, there's a couple where it's like, I feel like this is at least going to change a lot, whether that's good or bad.
Exactly. So hopefully you can talk me through it. I can talk you through it, the whole deal here. And yes, as Joel mentioned, we are using Fantasy Pros consensus ADP here. So if you guys want to check that out, you want to reference that, that's what we are going ahead and doing here today. But let's waste no more time. Let's jump into it. Joel, who is your first ADP that you are, let's say, raising an eyebrow at?
Yeah, I'll say raising an eyebrow negatively. Just to be clear on this one, a little more confident, maybe not confident, but a little more hesitant, I'll say. And it's not because he's not good. It's just the 15th overall pick has to be a stud. And Trey McBride, I think he can be great right now. I don't know if he would be my tight end one. I don't really like taking him 15th overall here. Lots of different reasons why, but a surprising stat, his fantasy points per route in an incredible season was actually only fourth among tight ends. Amazing, but the reason that he was so good, the tight end won by a mile, was because of the volume. And if there were stats, it would be positive if we were reading these stats in week 16. But the fact that it was last season and now we are projecting a new season with a new coach, probably a new quarterback, Jeremiah Love, a receiving running back coming into this team, lots has changed. The routes, for example, last year in a team that just threw the ball so much. Jamar Chase had 613 routes. That was the most among any receiver. McBride had 667. Over 150 more routes than any other tight end in the NFL. Like five games worth of tight end routes more than the next guy. So it was just a lot of volume to go around. He was constantly on the field. And a lot of it was with Jacoby Brissett. He only averaged 12 points per game in PPR leagues with Kyler Murray. So we're talking off, Jacoby Brissett is gone after this first month, and you get Carson Beck in there. There's just a lot of history to go here when we're looking at the past tight ends being drafted round one, round two. They most likely don't repeat. And it's hard right now with so many changes to predict another dominant season for Trey McBride. I think he'd be a top two tight end. But the question just is he worth the 15th overall pick?
And this is one where we're on the same page. Boone and I talked about this in our mock draft recap show, because Trey McBride did not go as the tight end one in that exercise. Brock Bowers went as the tight end one. And I think that probably should be, by the time we're doing drafts in August, I think that probably should be the consensus opinion, because, you know, Joel, you pointed this out, just how many more routes he got than every other tight end. I just think there's no way that's repeating this coming season. And not to mention, I think the other variable here is just the target consolidation that happened in Arizona last year after Marvin Harrison was hurt between Michael Wilson and Trey McBride. Like, not only were those guys getting abnormal route volume, you know, Michael Wilson led the NFL in routes last year, obviously Trey McBride number one among tight ends, like that was a big part of it, but also there was no kind of like third receiver in the mix, there was no receiving running back in the mix, it was essentially just those two guys last year. That's probably not happening either. So beyond the fact that we don't have a real quarterback answer, you know, Carson Beck, maybe he's starting at some point, beyond the fact that we're likely to get these routes cut off, you also can't necessarily just pencil in like, oh yeah, Trey McBride will be so far ahead on his own team in terms of target share. So there's a lot working. There's a lot working against McBride here, essentially. Where do you, like, from an overall standpoint, feel the most comfortable with him? And would you have Bowers ahead of him as the tight end one?
I do have Bowers ahead of him right now. And that might sound hot right now. I think that will be an even, like, 50-50 when we get to August on who prefers who. I'm fine with him in round three.
Right now, like, neither one of these guys is going, you know, crazy apart from each other. Trey McBride is 15th right now. Brock Bowers is 19th overall. So just from an overall standpoint, that I would essentially flip those and maybe push them both down. Again, this is just my early kind of lean on this. You know, the other players that Trey McBride is going around here, Kenneth Walker, Malik Nabers, Amarian Hampton, who we're actually going to be talking about in a little bit. Here, and then it's Brock Bowers, Chase Brown, Josh Allen, Derrick Henry. So I do think from like a replaceability standpoint, obviously tight end is tough. I personally, and I'm curious, Joel, what you think about this. I personally prefer, like if to use the Scott Pienowski term, I'd probably prefer vanity tight end over vanity quarterback this year. So but I don't like to do one or the other, or like, I don't like to do both. I want to do one or the other here, essentially. So to me, I'm okay with taking an early tight end. I do just think Brock Bowers ahead of Trey McBride and maybe behind a guy like Kenneth Walker. But again, even when we get to like Malik Nabers, I mean, Nabers at 17th overall, wide receiver 7, that's a little risky kind of given some of his health concerns. So I wouldn't totally hate somebody just opting for one of these high-end tight ends from an overall standpoint, because there are some dicier bets. But, you know, Chase Brown, Derrick Henry, hard to kind of poke holes in those guys' outlook, though, if we're just weighing other positions against the tight end.
Yeah, and when we look at hit rates, when we're going back by position, tight end is usually the scarier one, especially when you like need an elite one to actually make a difference when all the other tight ends kind of score the same amount of points. So when we're talking quarterbacks versus tight ends, if it's Josh Allen, I would rather have Josh Allen in round three if they end up being close to the same ADP, or other quarterbacks that aren't rushing, I would also pass on. But if there's a rushing quarterback that's around the same range as a tight end, I usually lean toward that rushing quarterback.
Yeah, that makes sense. I agree with you on the Josh Allen part of it. It's everybody after Josh Allen is where I feel like we get into a little bit of murky territory with the vanity quarterbacks. But these tight ends, yeah, like if you take one of these guys, and like, again, let's just, this is why I do think Bowers has just more of a chance to be that dominant target getter. But let's just say, Joel, like you take Trey McBride at 15th overall, and Michael Wilson is still really good, and Marvin Harrison takes a step forward in year three. You're going to be banged if you take, you know, Trey McBride and he's getting like 100 targets as opposed to the target total that he had last year. So that's a good point just about the positional hit rate and how that can really screw you, essentially, if you take that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bowers had lots going against him last year and still had his moments.
No question. Okay, let's get into my first one here. And I'll be honest, I mentioned at the top of the exercise, like, ADPs we have a problem with. Okay, I actually do have a problem with Nico Collins being wide receiver 11 and 27th overall. I think this is one to take advantage of, and this is one that I would have him ahead of this ADP, Nico Collins. So again, Nico Collins is some of the guys at wide receiver he's going behind. And I don't think any of these guys are necessarily crazy, crazy overvalued, but I think I probably prefer Nico over George Pickens and definitely Drake London, who we'll talk about. And, you know, Rashee Rice, I could maybe go back and forth between him and Nico Collins. And the reason for this, I think, is one, Nico Collins is awesome. He's great at football. He's an awesome football player when he's out there. I get that there are injury concerns. There's no question about that. But I do think the biggest problem for Nico in terms of this ADP and why it's a little bit lower, Joel, it's just the last thing that we saw of CJ Stroud is such a bad memory. Not just the New England game, but also the Pittsburgh game. Like, that is the last thing that people remember of CJ Stroud. I think that has really clouded the discourse around Stroud as a quarterback this offseason. From an EPA per play standpoint, I brought this up many times. During the regular season, Stroud was sandwiched between Patrick Mahomes and Sam Darnold. One of the, yeah, obviously wasn't Mahomes' best season, but still good. And obviously Darnold won the freaking Super Bowl as the quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks. So not a bad season from an efficiency standpoint with CJ Stroud. And I think you could tell yourself a story where the offense is better under Nick Caley in year two of the system. More scheming, more getting guys in favorable situations. I think they have a receiver room with Jaden Higgins, Jalen Knoll. We'll see what we get out of Tank Dell this year potentially, but those three guys I think can play all across the formation, which might allow them to do more with a player like Nico Collins, move him around, get him in some more favorable matchups, which they just didn't quite do enough of last year, but I think they could maybe do more of this year. Plus, offensive line is certainly looking like a better unit right now than probably what they started the season with in Houston last year. So I think there's a lot more going in the positive direction for Houston's passing game. And again, I just compare him to some of those other wide receivers, even neighbors at wide receiver seven. Like, should there be this massive, you know, 10 pick gap between Malik Nabers at 17th overall and Nico Collins at 27th overall? I'm not 100% sure about that considering Nabers' injury status, but you know, Drake London, I love Drake London. He's got Tua quarterback this year. Michael Penix, maybe. That seems like a situation to potentially avoid. George Pickens, franchise tag. How happy is he about that? You know, there's some more variance there. So, again, I don't think any of those guys are so disgustingly overvalued at wide receiver, but I look at Collins at 27th overall, Joel, wide receiver 11, and think that's something that I would I like that price on Nico Collins.
Those are some big names, which is surprising to put him over. So I like it. I like Collins better this year than last year. At least I think he'll be better this season than what he produced last year. It's also one of those Brian Windhorst moments where they ran, they were 29th in multi-tight end sets, and then they used their round two pick on a blocking tight end. Why is that? So it's one of those things where maybe they go to more multi-tight end sets that helps Nico Collins more than any other like type of receiver. Like, he barely plays in the slot. So that would help him a lot too if they do go to more 12 personnel, that sort of thing. Get him in better situations that way too.
Yeah, that's an article I'm going to write for the site here in the coming weeks, and something I would be looking at more is when these teams go to multiple tight end sets. This is a really good point by Joel. It does typically push targets to the alpha wide receiver. Jaxon Smith-Njigba is the best example of this last year. Puka Nacua as well. Like, these guys, yeah, they were running a lot of 13 personnel, 12 personnel, whatever. A lot of that is to get formations on the field where the wide receiver is going to be able to rip it downfield. You're bringing in more base defenses and stuff like that. So it typically pushes those targets to those guys. So figuring out which player is going to benefit from that across these teams is really huge this year. And typically, like, I think if you want to be maybe a little reductive about this and like make it too simplistic, typically it's like the X receiver is going to be the guy that benefits in these situations. Well, Nico Collins has almost been used at X receiver like too much the last few years, Joel. So I definitely think he is the guy that will benefit the most from that. So that's a really good point. Just give me your kind of, I know we're talking about another Houston player later, so maybe we can come back to this, but just passing game wise, how are you feeling about this Texans offense right now?
I'm hoping it'll be better. I think the offensive line does help Stroud a lot because I don't think he's the type of quarterback that is necessarily going to be the big time playmaker when he's under pressure and scrambling around. Like, he is at his best when you can keep him clean and he can just deal. Like, it's 7-on-7 and he can get the ball to his receivers, like Nico Collins, like that big guy in space downfield, rather than trying to survive and fight for his life and doesn't really have a run game to help him at all, and just everything is on him. So have more hope in it this year than last year, just with all the struggles there. So hoping that Stroud can be better too.
All right, let's get to your second ADP that you're raising an eyebrow at.
Mm-hmm. This one's more positive, where I think Hampton is going to be a riser, the Chargers running back. As we get closer to the season, I think it's going to be a guy that has a ton of hype around him. Everything is just better for this guy. Compared to last year, when he was a first-round pick, he showed that he is very talented. His efficiency was amazing when he had the ball in his hands. Top five running back upside is hard to find. And even when we get to this range of like RB11 is his ADP, RB11 to like RB15, I would say he's definitely the best guy in terms of who has the best upside at this position. He's got better coaching, Mike McDaniel coming in. The offensive line should be way better just because of the injuries. And I would expect the volume to be better too. He's not battling injuries, or like you're hoping he's not during the season. He had a lot of games last year where he was on a snap count. So when he's getting that volume up, it should be all systems go. Like, he was amazing when he had the volume and the touches late in the season, especially outside those first two games, where his first two career games, it was a slow start. After that point, he was the RB8 with all those bad things, like the offensive line problems, still not getting all the volume because he was coming back from injury. So there's so much positive where the offensive line is back healthy. They were ranked 29th in that combined run blocking grade. So much is going in the positive direction compared to the negative.
Yeah, man, it's going to be hard to not get overexcited about this Chargers offense, right? And obviously, I think about this a lot from the receiver standpoint about, well, you know, which of the receivers is going to benefit when they get all these tight ends on the field? Because they, not only do they sign Charlie Kolar, who's literally giving like press conferences about how much he loves blocking, right? They also signed David Njoku just this week. So they have a lot of potential to go along with Haronde Gadsden to run a lot of 13 personnel, 12 personnel, everything like that. So you think about, okay, which receiver is going to benefit from that? But it's maybe a little bit, I'm thinking about that receiver problem too much and not just thinking about, hey, you know who's really going to benefit from this? The first round rookie running back that they took last year, who was good, as Joel mentioned, when he got the opportunities, and is likely going to be running in a much more favorable situation. And also, Joel, there were some running back evaluators I really trust who noted that, like, Greg Roman's gap-based run scheme probably wasn't the best fit for Amarian Hampton, who's this explosive, kind of more one-cut runner. And this offense, which we imagine Mike McDaniel's going to run, where there's a lot more zone blocking, like, get these guys out of the perimeter, that's really where we could see Amarian Hampton cook. So it's funny, because I see this ADP, like, oh, 18th overall, like running back 11, we're going right there with Amarian Hampton. But the more you talk about it, the more we pull the pieces apart here, Joel, it is kind of hard to find flaws, I guess, in his profile right now.
Mm-hmm. They bring Al Gengold even too, fullback from Miami over to Los Angeles. Miami, like with Mike McDaniels, they're the 11th scoring offense, but in terms of fantasy running back points, they were third. He's had three straight top six running backs with Achane twice, Mostert back three seasons ago. So every single year he's produced with running backs, this offense, even when it's not at his best, still produces for running backs. And as you talked about, first round picks, they almost always succeed in fantasy. If it's not year one, it's year two. I've probably repeated this stat so many times on different videos, but I love it and applies consistently for both Hampton and Genty. If we go back to 2015, the guys that are drafted running backs in the top 25, every single one of them, all 11, since 2015, has finished as a fantasy RB1 in the first two seasons. So the few that weren't immediate fantasy running back ones, like the Jahmyr Gibbs, those types, well, their second year, they were a fantasy running back one, like a Melvin Gordon after a really bad rookie season. Bijan Robinson became that. So we're looking, maybe Genty Hampton can make it 13 out of 13 if they both become fantasy running back ones this season.
Yeah, and there's just a lot that's going Amarian Hampton's way. I'm curious what you think about him from like a passing down standpoint, because you know, he did lose some pass blocking reps late in the year to Kamani Vidal, but you don't know if that's like because he was coming back from injury and everything like that. And that's a big part of one, not just Devon Achane's success in Mike McDaniel's offense. He was awesome as a rusher, especially late last year. But at the same time, a lot of those just like cheapy checkdowns and stuff like that was big for Devon Achane. But Justin Herbert's a guy who's pretty willing to check that ball down when he doesn't like the look. Obviously, Austin Ekeler caught a bazillion checkdowns in that offense previously, different version of it, but still Herbert's more than willing to get there. So do you think Amarian Hampton can develop enough skills to be that passing down guy? And really, that's to me the thing that would take him into not just running back one status, but like clear workhorse elite fantasy running back status.
Mm-hmm. I think there's some good signs there. The Chargers last year when Hampton wasn't playing, they were 31st in running back target share. And then when Hampton was playing in the games that he was healthy, they were middle of the pack, like 17th, I believe. So I think that they're still going to be using him in the passing game more than Vidal, even, who a lot of people like saw as the passing guy. And then Hampton came back and he was getting 7 targets when Vidal was getting 2 targets. So I think that's a big positive. McDaniel used Achane as a receiver a lot, but like pure, like as a receiver, not a running back getting receptions. So it actually wasn't many like backfield screens to Achane. They were super low in that. It was more so the screens when he was a slot receiver out wide. So I don't think Hampton will get as much of those, but I still think he will be a receiving threat, kind of similar to how he was last year. Pretty good, but not like CMC or Bijan or Gibbs.
I like it. Okay, that's good news and good signal for Amarian Hampton. I'll talk about another round one rookie from last year, and that is Emeka Ebuka. I listed this as an ADP I don't necessarily like, but after seeing some quotes today from the offensive coordinator, I'm not strongly holding to that bad ADP, and I want to unpack that here a little bit. I posted about this earlier today, but Emeka Ebuka, wide receiver 17, 39th overall. So my biggest problem with the Ebuka ADP before kind of today, so I just charted out his season for reception perception, looking at the full season for Ebuka. Number one, like there was definitely a difference between his play at the beginning of the year and the end of the year. Obviously, anybody that one had Ebuka in fantasy or two listened to this damn show last year knows that we talked a lot, probably too much about the first half, second half splits with him. Obviously, Baker Mayfield was hurt. Maybe, and he certainly was not playing well. There were other just issues with the offense overall, but Ebuka was not playing as well at the end of the season as the beginning of the season. And there's two reasons, at least from charting it all out, Joel, that I think that was the case. One, he clearly was not himself. I think after that week 7 hamstring injury, he just never quite moved as well as he did at the beginning of the year, especially on outbreaking routes. Like he really struggled to kind of plant and rip and separate against man coverage, man and press coverage, like he was at the beginning of the year after that week 7 hamstring injury. So I think that's part of it. And sometimes like guys will just get these injuries and it'll just ruin their whole seasons, what they could have been. He was definitely, I think, one of those guys. The other problem though, Joel, is that he ended up taking a lot of snaps, did Emeka Ebuka, as the X receiver because Mike Evans was hurt last year. So when I say X receiver for the listeners, because I know we got an email about this to the mailbag, I forget who sent it in. So shout out to them sending this question about just defining some of the terms. When talking about the X receiver, it's the outside on-ball receiver. So all these guys who are doing all the fun move-around stuff, kicking into the slot as the Z receiver where you're off the line of scrimmage, the X receiver doesn't get to do that. They've got to run, you know, against press man coverage on the outside for the most part. That's not really what Ebuka was as a prospect, right? Like he was kind of a big slot, more of a zone beater. We see today, offensive coordinator Zach Robinson, back-to-back quote says, number one, Robinson talking about Ted Hurst, their round 3 rookie, said so many things he likes about Ted Hurst, exciting skill set, great instincts. Plus, he said having a, quote, true X like Hurst can be a great weapon because of how you can use him to dictate coverages, which is essentially the sacrificial X receiver theory that I'm always talking about. The other thing that he said was that he saw Ebuka sliding into that Z receiver role in the offense, which certainly makes a lot more sense with his skill set. When you're that Z receiver and you're off ball, you can move around a lot more pre-snap. You can kick into the slot. You can start as the Z receiver at the snap of the ball, and then you can essentially become the slot when I'm doing a lot of stupid motions with my hands for people who are listening to this on the audio feed. So I apologize. You can essentially become a slot receiver post snap if you're this guy in this particular system. So, and you're going to run a lot more zone coverage reps than you will be as that perimeter receiver running kind of the vertical route tree. So, these two quotes from Robinson were like classic Harmon bait. So I apologize for like dorking out about this too hard right now. And I apologize, Joel, for talking too long about this, but I actually think this is pretty good news for Ibuka being in this role. Is that enough for him to be the 17th receiver off the board in an offense that still admittedly is crowded and I do have questions about? I'm not 100% sure about that. You know, we're talking about the 39th player off the board here. I could maybe squint at that and have some problems with it, but I'm curious, Joel, because I've blabbed on and on about, you know, Z receivers and motion and all this stuff. What do you think about the Bucs and Ibuka specifically? Like, is this ADP at wide receiver 17 too high? And am I over-indexing on these Z receiver comments on freaking May 12th from Zach Robinson?
No, I saw those tweets from you today. I love it. Glad that that's happening. It's positive for Ibuka, obviously, like you've said. I think he just becomes more of that boom bust, especially with what we know right now. The volume can just be so high. And we've seen so many of these Bucs receivers with Baker Mayfield the past 4 years just be amazing in fantasy. So I think he can be a fantasy wide receiver one if we saw more of what we saw at the start of last season. But it's hard to know fully what the reason was for that drop off because of the injury. Because before the hamstring, he was averaging 18 points per game. After, it was 6.5. So it is so drastic. And there are so many other issues. And a lot of it can just like stem back to his injury or Baker's injury. Or just you can't be 100% sure. So wide receiver 17 is high. But in that range, he's probably one of the guys that has the best like wide receiver one hopes in terms of like those big ceilings going into year two. Most likely will be that number one receiver in Tampa Bay over these other guys. No Mike Evans there anymore. So there's just going to be lots of risk, but lots of upside along with it.
Right. And I do think regardless of which receiver position he's going to play, just because of, you know, Baker coming off of a down season. Like, I think if you look at Ibuka's season in totality, both from a statistical perspective and a reception perception perspective, even though both numbers did decline from the first half to the back half, he's still in totality, he had a good rookie season, right? And we want to bet on guys that had good rookie seasons, kind of taking that next step in year two, year three, whatever. So I think that's fine. But even with that said, there's still some volatility in the profile, some boom bust nature to it, as you mentioned, Joel. The thing that's just tough for me, even though I do want to bet on this profile taking a step forward, I just look at some of the guys that he's going behind, like Zay Flowers, or he's going ahead of, excuse me, like Zay Flowers, you know, like Ladd McConkey. I think I would rather have those two guys than Emeka Ibuka. Guys like DJ Moore, Luther Burden, Davante Adams, Mike Evans, Jalen Waddle. Like there, it's a mixed group there that I wouldn't say like in that tier, he's the guy I definitely want, right? But there are some players I would rather have him than maybe some of those veterans like Moore, Adams, Evans, and probably I'd rather have Ibuka than Luther Burden this year, but I don't feel strongly about that one either.
Yeah, I would say more of a guy where it's like if he's falling, you take him, but compared to everyone else, is your favorite? Probably not. But yeah, Ladd is a good one to like fight against or wonder about. Like they're very similar, like Ladd coming off which is a struggle last year after being incredible. We've seen the highs, we've seen the lows, like which is going to happen next year with less competition, more positives all around. So yeah, that's a fun one to discuss.
Yeah, and the good news is this is May, so we have, you know, months and months to discuss and break these down and debate these players versus each other. But for now, we're going to take a quick break. We come back, we're talking through more ADPs we're raising an eyebrow at. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to talk through ADPs we're raising an eyebrow at here in the early portion of the offseason. Joel, let's get to your third player that you think is a little questionable right now.
This one does break my heart because I'll be more negative, but I guess we can now just say that it's more in question of his ADP.
Yeah.
And that's Joe Burrow. I was really surprised where he was going. Quarterback 3 after last season when he was quarterback 17, you know, the injuries, all that sort of stuff, but quarterback 17 in points per game, to be clear. But he's going quarterback three, round four. And the big thing here is just the process compared to just the player. If we look at passing quarterbacks in the last decade, their hit rates early in the early rounds, round two to five, passing quarterbacks hit 31% of the time. Extremely low compared to other positions. And when we're looking at rushing quarterbacks, that's 63% of the time. So two times better than passing quarterbacks usually with just like the same marks to hit. So Burrow going this early with the combination of the injuries, not having too much rushing, especially ever since when he gets injured, he rushes less along with it. And he's only hit this two times in the past. So this brings up lots of concerns for a guy going this early. You have to have him score 20 points per game at least. And I don't love it for right now, especially with a couple of the changes in Cincinnati recently.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on this one again. And it comes back to sort of what we were talking about. It has nothing to do with Joe Burrow, honestly, even though you're right to point out like these passing based players. It's a little bit of a thinner margin for error with those guys. But even regardless, I think this is just a structural standpoint, Joel, where even ADP right now, it has like Josh Allen tier of his own, 29th overall. Everybody else is a little bit lower than that. Like, but still, these guys do kind of, they're in a little bit of a tougher spot with Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, some of these players that are going higher. Do you like any of those quarterback ADPs? Because I to be honest with you, I don't, honestly. I feel a little bit better with like the next couple of tiers, and I'm just not sure the replacement value is worth it. But do you feel like any strongly about any of those kind of second tier, maybe third tier quarterbacks, which Burrow is certainly bucketed into that second tier?
Not necessarily. There's some that I think can bounce back in big ways and be worth it, but it's still hard to draft them that early. That would be Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson for me right now, just depending on where their ADPs fall. But it's really Josh Allen is the only one that's like consistently elite year after year after year after year that's worth a round two or round three pick. So it's tough. And when we're looking at Burrow specifically, a lot of the passing quarterbacks, when you're looking in the preseason, there's lots of signs where it's like, oh, their defense is going to be really bad. The weapons are amazing, and they're going to be passing a ton. It's what Dak Prescott was last year. It's what Burrow's been in the past. But although the Bengals have an incredible offense, their offensive line is better too. They made a lot of changes on defense this year. So they might not be the best defense in the NFL, but it's a big difference going from bottom three to potentially middle of the pack. They bring in Dexter Lawrence, obviously, Brian Cook at safety, Boye Mafe in the line, draft defensive line. So there is lots of changes on that defense too. And it's their second year with Al Golden as coordinator, hopefully some growth there as well.
I think the tough part for Burrow, and this might just end up being the discussion with him every year, as long as he continues to kind of hold down this range, is that there's just like really not that much difference between, you mentioned like Dak Prescott, like Joe Burrow and Dak Prescott, their projection at this point, but probably not that different. I know that Matthew Stafford like had this, he was this guy last year. I don't know if, you know, another year older, whatever, he will be this guy again, but Matthew Stafford's going in the hundreds. Right. And to me, yes, like Burrow will definitely rush a little bit more than Matthew Stafford. No question. I agree. Like Stafford's going to give you pretty much nothing as a rusher. You're basically relying on passing touchdowns, passing output, the whole deal. Where Burrow, you're maybe a little bit less than that. But again, this is like you're 47th overall versus like in the hundreds versus the quarterback ADP for these guys. Like, I think I would rather just roll that dice with Stafford versus playing up for the replacement value and losing that replacement value for a guy in Joe Burrow. So I think this might just always kind of haunt him as long as he holds this range down.
Yeah, it's a lot to ask. And compared to the other positions, you're not going to find a running back and receiver very often that's scoring 20 points per game in round 8 or round 9, round 10. And there's usually a few quarterbacks each year that'll pull that off. Or maybe not 20 points per game, but quarterback one numbers. So taking a guy that has been injured a lot, and on top of it, the rushing, although it's not insane for Burrow in the past, but in his really good years, he's added 3 points per game on the ground. But when he's injured or coming off of injuries, that goes down to 1, and those couple points per game matter.
It definitely matters. It matters along the margins and everything like that when you're building out these teams. Okay, I'm going to get to my third player here, and I'm really hoping you could talk me through this particular player, because I'm a little concerned, and I'm hoping to not be as concerned by the time we are really drafting these teams. That is Travion Henderson as the running back 23, 54th overall ADP. 54th overall, whatever. I mean, it's not terrible or anything like that. It's not like he's going as like in the top three rounds or anything. I still am just not 100% convinced we should be drafting Travion Henderson this far ahead of, you know, a guy like Ramondre Stevenson in his own backfield. Like, Joel, I can't get it out of my head, and maybe I'm over indexing on this and I just need to let it go. I can't get it out of my head that the Patriots at the end of the season, when they were playing for a pretty big game called the Super Bowl, all the way through that, they trusted Ramondre Stevenson as the guy well ahead of Travion Henderson. And I don't think Stevenson did anything to lose touches this year. I thought he played pretty well in stretches last year from an explosive play standpoint. Like, yes, obviously Travion Henderson made some monster plays with big runs at different points for this offense. Stevenson also, from an explosive rate standpoint, was pretty solid as well. So when I'm just looking at Travion Henderson running, like I said, running back 23-ish, 22nd in the 50s, I just think there are guys that, like, is Travion Henderson, should he project that much better than DeAndre Swift, who goes later? Or, you know, would you rather take the shot on like a Jadarian Price or Bashaul Tutin? I could be convinced that like those are better bets than Travion Henderson right now. So I want you to talk me through this. I want you to help me through this one. Like, where do you stand on Travion Henderson?
It is one of those things where there's not much reason to put him too much over Stevenson. And it's not like he's in this dominant situation where if he's getting 50% of the touches, like that's enough. Where there's just a lot of rate. He played four snaps in the AFC Championship game. There is some problems. And the worst part is his problems are some of Stevenson's strengths. Pass blocking, for example. He was bottom three among running backs. Stevenson was top three. And it's that PFF pass blocking grade. That's a pretty big gap. Or even if Stevenson like gets better, gets to where we expected him to be out of college, well, Stevenson's still probably going to be at least as good, if not better, at pass blocking. The short yardage plays, same thing. Like Henderson was last in the percentage of his yards coming after contact. Stevenson's most likely going to keep that red zone short yardage role. So there is just some issues there where Henderson, he has the upside that he had multiple top five fantasy running back weeks, I think even three, where Stevenson maybe doesn't have that, but he has enough of a role to keep Henderson away from being that consistently.
And this is something where, again, I'm going to say this, and I don't even know if I really believe it, but the Patriots offense was number one in EPA per play last year. They were fourth in success rate. What if the entire unit just regresses a little bit? Which I think is possible, even though on paper that wouldn't make any sense, right? Because they're probably going to add A.J. Brown before June 2nd. They did add Romeo Doubs. They've obviously added some offensive linemen. Elijah Vera Tucker's here. We'll see if he can stay healthy. They drafted Caleb Lomu in the first round. Like, they've done all the things, plus Drake May is awesome. Haven't said that yet, but Drake May is awesome. Josh McDaniels, a perfectly credible offensive coordinator. There's no real reason on paper that they should regress, and yet teams that finish first in EPA per play, like, don't just rip that every single season. Like, typically there is some churn and offensive chaos. So I don't know. That's just like another variable, Joel. I don't know if you have any regression concerns about the Patriots. Again, they've done all the things right to stave off regression. They've added some players. Hopefully they get more out of Kyle Williams in year two, who was basically just like had the most sacrificial X receiver season of all time, which I didn't have on my bingo card. Just all outside on the line of scrimmage and run go routes. That's it. Never get any catches. Just run go routes. That's it. So again, maybe these guys can all get better, like Travion Henderson can also get better, but there is just some also regression concerns to consider here as well.
Yeah, the only thing I would think is like maybe the schedule. Just everyone knows like how easy their schedule was last year in the regular season.
I have heard that, yeah.
And yeah, even though their division might not be like that much better, the schedule is going to be a little bit harder.
Yeah, I have heard about the Patriots in the schedule. Probably every time you tweet about the Patriots, that is going to be in your mentions. Okay, let's get to another running back here. Your fourth player that you think this one is a questionable ADP.
I would say questionable, and it's more process. There's just so much that scares me here. I feel like there's so many players like this in the past that have not worked out, and that'd be David Montgomery. Round four ADP, it kind of shocked me. I do my rankings before looking at ADP, and this is one of the bigger ones where I was like, oh my gosh, maybe I'm like too low on David Montgomery. But he's 29-year-old running back, switching teams after a down year. And that's usually a tough mix to put together. So I know he's expected to be their guy there. They traded a fourth round pick, which is a decent bit for a running back nowadays. But it doesn't give me a lot of confidence. The situation, although the volume is going to be better, is, you know, pretty objectively worse compared to Detroit's offense. The offensive line is getting better, you would hope. It was pretty bad last year, but they've changed it around a lot. There's just still concerns in terms of, can he have the upside as some of the guys in this range? I would guess, based on what you just said, you'd have him over Trayvon Henderson. Henderson's being drafted a couple spots behind him, but it's kind of tough for me to draft Montgomery over Henderson. I would definitely like a guy that you'll talk about next, or a guy like DeAndre Swift, even, I would rather have over David Montgomery. Some guys where I just don't really think Montgomery has the upside as these guys do, where he could maybe be an RB2, but for round four, I'm not like dying for him.
Right. I think you hit it on the head right there, like about the upside part of this. Is that, that to me was what I was going to say, is that if you're an upside, you know, drafter, you're never taking David Montgomery at, you know, 48th overall or whatever like that. You're hoping the people who take Montgomery are ones that are, if he hits, he's going to be like a small hit, essentially. Like, you're going to draft him at running back 21. And like, what's the best case scenario, Joel? He finishes as running back 15, 16?
I was just going to say 15.
Yeah, right. Like, yeah, that's it. It's like, all right, cool. Like, he's an ADP beater, but there's pretty much no scenario where, even if I have skepticism about Trayvon Henderson, like if Trayvon Henderson just comes in and he's like a totally different player this year, and the Patriots offense is the, you know, first, second, third, whatever in EPA per play, like Trayvon Henderson could rip this year in fantasy. Like, he could be awesome. David Montgomery, like, best case scenario, he's, yeah, like I said, probably the 15th best running back in fantasy, in an environment that we have some questions about just who he is as a player. Like, I liked the trade for Houston. Forget about like what they gave up, value of running backs, all that stuff. But just getting a credible running back who's going to help them go from the 31st rushing success rate team since CJ Stroud has been drafted to, shoot, can they be average at running the ball from a down and distance standpoint? That would be huge for Stroud, for the offense, whatever, but that doesn't necessarily move the needle for us from a fantasy standpoint, unless he's going to be this outrageous goal line back, an outlier there. I do have a tough time seeing him push past that 15th running back ranking.
Yeah, that is the path that I like thought of in my head, of their defense is extremely good, the offensive line is better. Do they just get a ton of red zone opportunities and Montgomery's just getting 15 touchdowns? Like, maybe, but yeah. I can't get past
James Conner from a few years ago.
Yeah. I can't get past Dan Campbell coming in, taking over play calling, a guy that's just been obsessed with David Montgomery in the past, and cutting his touches even more to 30%, just like your average NFL running back too. So there's just a lot of things like that where I just can't get over.
It's a great point. I'll never forget when Dan Campbell said about David Montgomery, he's like, I wish I could have played with this guy. Well, I guess he forgot about that quote, because, yeah, he quite literally did kind of put him on the shelf when he took over the play calling there. And hard to argue with the results, because Jahmyr Gibbs is a baller. Another guy who I think is really good running back, and he's going right after David Montgomery here, is Quinshon Judkins, running back 22, 49th overall ADP. So, again, like quite literally right after where Montgomery is going. And you said this, I would agree. I would prefer Judkins. I would also prefer Judkins over several. Like, he's a guy I would rather have than Trayvon Henderson right now, going in a similar range. You know, I might rank him ahead of Cam Scataboo. You know, Bucky Irving is an interesting kind of debate there. I just think he's somebody that, if he's in this running back 22 range, I am going to be targeting. I know he's coming off an injury. He played for the Browns. Two pretty big questionable variables right there. But I think the risk versus reward proposition for a guy who is a good back and can be an efficient runner is totally fine at running back 22. If he was going to be up there in the top 15 backs, I might, you know, be shying away from the risk reward proposition. But again, accepting some of the volatility here at running back 22, this feels like the right range to do it, Joel.
Mm-hmm. Most of the guys in this range, I would say, year after year, The ones that hit are the ones when you can predict their high volume correctly. And I think Judkins is one of those bigger guarantees where you would expect him to be a 20-touch-a-game guy this year. And then the other factor, that offensive line is just completely different in a positive way.
Positive way for sure. Like, it's definitely different. How positive is it going to be? We'll see, right? The names are all different, but I'm also just high on Todd Monken, right? We know the quarterback situation is the quarterback situation, but Monken's a really good play designer, man, and I think that is a good bit of news here for Quinshon Judkins and some of that, some of the running game juice that we'll get from Todd Monken here coming over. But we are going to take our final quick break. We come back, we have two more questionable ADPs we're going to talk about. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we are back, and we are talking through our final two ADPs that we think are a little questionable here. Let's get into your fifth and final player, Joel. This is another running back, kind of going in that same range of players we've talked about so far.
Yes, I do have some trivia for you real quick. I know we just saw some trivia on the screen. It would be the top teams in running back fantasy points from last season, and who is fourth behind those top three? Number one, if we're looking at it, is Detroit. The obvious one, Gibbs, Montgomery. Number two is Atlanta with Bijan. Three is San Francisco with Christian McCaffrey. Do you have any idea who number four is?
Based on, you know, the fact that we are talking about this particular player, I'm going to guess the Pittsburgh Steelers, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
Yes, it is kind of cheating, but it is Jalen Warren and the Pittsburgh Steelers with Kenny Gainwell last year in this Aaron Rodgers offense. So, surprise, definitely not one that I am usually pretty high on. This is a guy that I didn't necessarily like last year. And again, a guy when we're looking at ADP, RB30. And it just really surprised me because I feel like the situation this year is better than it was last year. And he finishes the RB18 last year. He had some injuries. So there were some problems last year that he fought through, and he was still a good RB2. I think Kenny Gainwell takes more value away from Warren than Rico Dowdle is. I know that is up for debate, but Warren, an amazing pass blocker. He can get more of the receiving this year. He's been a receiving back in the past, but he can be more of that this season than he was last season, getting more of those points out of the backfield that way. And if he gets the touchdowns like he has in the past, he can be an RB2 again.
Yeah, you took Jalen Warren ahead of Rico Dowdle, and I ended up taking Dowdle in our mock draft. I was a little surprised about that just because, to me, on paper, Joel, I think Rico Dowdle projects better, but I'm not 100% sure that I'm correct on that. Like, you might actually have this one right, and I think the biggest question here is just, like, does Jalen Warren take some of that passing? Like, does he take all of the passing down work? Does he take the cheapy receptions that Kenny Gainwell was getting from Aaron Rodgers? Also, again, it's freaking May 12th, and we don't yet have Aaron Rodgers signed on this roster, which is just like whatever. So I guess that really is the biggest variable that could go in Jalen Warren's favor. Like, if he gets those receptions, he will likely dust Rico Dowdle in fantasy, even if in my opinion, I think Dowdle is a better base down runner than Jalen Warren is at this point.
Since I think their ADPs are pretty much right next to each other, so that'll be another interesting debate, whether it's both that can be good, both are bad, or if one is kind of a lot better than the other.
I feel like there's no way both are good. So I think you kind of have to pick one or the other. So I think you do end up having to pick one or the other. And you've definitely pushed me on my like my thought was, I think Rico projects better. And I do think he projects as the better runner behind a good offensive line. Like, we're showing the depth chart here. I really like what they've done on the offensive line the last few years. But if this is Rodgers behind center, like, it is going to be a lot of Jalen Warren checkdowns and everything like that. Although, you know, Dowdle's a pretty decent pass protector as well. The answer could, by the way, just be neither. Like, don't take either one of them. I'm open to that being the correct answer here too. But I'll get to my fifth and final ADP here to talk about. And, like, Joel, I think I'm going to be a Kyler Murray guy this year. If we're going to have him be the 107th player off the board, QB 17, and let me be super clear for the people out there. I have not drafted a lot of Kyler Murray teams the last couple of years. I believe I drafted one Kyler Murray team not this past year, but the year before that. Him and Marvin Harrison were on that team together. Spoiler alert, it was my worst team of the 2024 fantasy season was those two guys. Okay, so there is that. But whatever. I've not been a big Kyler Murray fan the last couple of years. Definitely did not like his fit in that previous Cardinals offense. That being said, man, 107th overall, QB 17, if he starts the season and is the entire season starter for the Minnesota Vikings, what are the odds he beats this ADP? Like 85% chance that he's better than QB 17? I think, one, I'm curious if you think that if you feel the same way. I think he is definitely the starter and he will start all year for Minnesota. That's my feel of it. I'm curious your opinion on that. The other part of it is just, yes, he was definitely not a fit for the Arizona Cardinals offense. That being said, he was still a top 20 quarterback from an EPA per play standpoint under Drew Petzing the last few years. And if he's a top 20 NFL quarterback and he's in this Minnesota Vikings offense, which isn't perfect, but is a much better situation, and with a receiver in Justin Jefferson that isn't as specific as what Marvin Harrison has turned out to be and everything like that, like he's going to be a fantasy quarterback one, especially if he can get back to some of that rushing capability. So, Joel, where do you stand on Kyler Murray, Minnesota Vikings quarterback, and this QB 17 ADP?
Yeah, I would agree. The late round rushing quarterbacks are almost always a smart decision, at least in process. I didn't think he's going to start all year. He's got the weapons. He's got the coaching. A couple of things. He's been a quarterback one every single year up until last season. And Drew Petzing, he was incredible for Jacoby Brissett, but those are very different quarterbacks. So I think it is also important to point out, like, before Drew Petzing was the offensive coordinator, Murray averaged 21 points per game. After Petzing took over, it went down to 17.5. So maybe just new coaching in there, new talent there. He's going to be running. I would expect him to be a quarterback one if he's playing every game.
Yeah, and it just, look, maybe it turns around for J.J. McCarthy somewhere else, but he was one of, if not the worst starting quarterbacks in the NFL last year. It was just abnormally bad quarterback play last year for Minnesota. There's very little chance that Murray is that bad if he is the starting quarterback. I'm not going to say it's a 0% chance because anything is possible, but there's a very little chance there. And with that, like, you mentioned this too, like the late round rushing quarterback, Joel, we don't get a lot of those anymore at this point because ADP is sharp. Like, fantasy drafters are sharp. The last time we got a guy that was like, oh man, this guy's going to run a ton and he's a late round quarterback was like Lamar Jackson's starting year. You know, I mean, Justin Fields was the QB 7 last year. And like, I do think Fields, obviously, like, I mean, he was QB 7 off the board. And like, the guy got benched and was clearly a getting benched risk. I mean, it's possible that Kyler Murray gets benched. I'm not saying there's a 0% chance again, any of this stuff. Like, it might not work out for Murray in Minnesota. But at QB 17, 107th overall, I do feel like you got to take that shot every single time.
Yeah, 100%. Like, last year, Drake May was like basically the one guy that was a rushing quarterback being drafted late. The other one not being drafted, he wasn't a starting quarterback yet, but like Jackson Dart is another example. Like, you just picked him up for free and is a rushing quarterback. Like, these guys are just so good for fantasy value. We're talking just like Joe Burrow earlier. Like, if Kyler Murray and Joe Burrow score the same amount of fantasy points next year, it's not going to be too shocking. And Murray's going 10 rounds later or something like that.
Right. I mean, listen, I don't remember what happened last week, much less what was happening last year, but I feel like Drake May was like QB 10 last year, you know, like maybe QB 11, QB 12. So he was definitely going as a quarterback one. QB 17 for Kyler Murray, it's too low. It's got to be higher than that by the time we really get drafting here. But maybe I'm wrong. When's somebody gotten banged by being high on Kyler Murray before? Definitely never happened in human history.
Never.
Joel, great show today, buddy. Appreciate you jumping on with me. What are you working on right now that people can check out?
Ooh, we're going to be working on a new article this week with the NFL schedules, be the next big ones. Thursday is going to be the schedule release. So we'll have an article breaking all that down for fantasy football.
Love it. Definitely make sure you check out Joel's schedule content, because I've decided I'm not doing any scheduled content this year. Okay. Like my wedding anniversary is on May 14th. Shout out to my wife. 4 years being married to me, that she deserves an award for that for sure. I'm opting out of the schedule content this year. I'll be focused on that, not the NFL schedule release. So make sure you read Joel's schedule release content and diving into everything with that there. Speaking of Thursday, we do have a show coming for you on Thursday that I'm pre-taping. Okay. We're pre-taping this. We're not waiting for the schedule to come out. Football Guy's own Dave Kluge is going to join me on Thursday as we identify the 10 most pressing offseason questions that we have in fantasy that we can't answer. Okay, we're not going to get an answer to them unless we get to training camp. Like, that's the earliest. But for the most part, they are unanswerable pressing questions. We're going to have Dave on the show. We're going to try to solve that. We won't solve it, but we're going to try to do that. We're going to do that on Thursday. Until then, we are out.